Okay, so I'm gonna just skip the shitty intros that we normally do.
Aww.
I know, right?
I had something funny to say.
Oh, all right. Well, I'll let you do that then. I said I'm gonna skip it. I didn't say you would.
It's time to pod the record cast. Because that's what I literally just said to my wife moments ago as I got up from the chair to walk into my room to pod the record cast.
That's right.
If I may be dead.
Yeah, welcome to the Dungeon Master Grumpy. I'm your Jay host. My host co is Waples Christopher.
Yep, that's pretty much everything.
that's literally what just kind of came out of your mouth a moment ago.
Yep. So time to pod the record cast. Why are you skipping the intro?
Oh, I have no idea. I was just wanting to, get to it. Normally the intro is like something about Craig and we just move on, and it's usually really bad.
Yeah. All right, so let's start this time with usually what we end the podcast with, funny stories from our games.
Oh, okay. I got a whole story of what I ran this weekend, but I'll let you have at it.
So I have, I'm replaying in Adventures League my Owl campaign. And I'm kind of just testing out like different stat blocks for the monsters that I had originally that the players played through. Not like a lot of changes, kind of like confirming my thoughts on things.
Mm-hmm.
So I have this one boss, which is this great ancient tree. Okay. And the ancient tree is essentially this like CR 26 tree deity that runs this fae forest. Okay. But he tells you, he's upfront with this information that he's basically sucking the life out of the forest to keep himself alive because there's some darkness that's encroaching into their world that is basically eating them up inside. He's fighting it back and needs all the energy he can get. Thus, he's about to kill all the players and absorb their life essence. That's why he attacks the town with all the worms to weaken their defenses so he could, root his way in and absorb the Owl City's maybe like a small tree in the center that they call the sapling, which basically protects their city. He wants to absorb all that energy, so he sent these worms in to root in, blah blah blah.
Yeah.
And so it's impossible for a bunch of level 3/4 players to defeat a CR26 entity.
I would say that's accurate, yes.
Yeah. So he kind of like encases where they are in these giant vines. All right. And basically roots them to the ground and basically hits them one attack at a time until they fall down. Now, in his normal stat block, he's got like 4 attacks and can root and has legendary actions and legendary resists and all that stuff. But because he's so focused on keeping back the darkness and fighting back the darkness, he really can't devote all of his energies into attacking the players. Okay.
All right.
So that's why all he can do is erect the cage, root them, and swing once every round. Okay.
All right.
And so if you try to just spend all your time getting out of the roots and running away, he'll eventually kill you. Okay. The trick is you basically have to hit him. Okay. And it's super easy to hit him. He's a massive tree. His dex is like 0 because he's rooted to the ground. Okay.
Right.
And you basically hit him and keep hitting him and then basically force him to make concentration saving throws. After 3 failed concentration saving throws on his end, the darkness overtakes him and you win the fight.
But you still lose the war because he gets overtaken by the darkness.
Right. So that's the fight. And I was.
So my first question before you continue is, yeah, how many of your players' characters died doing this?
Oh, 0.
Okay.
0 died. A bunch kept getting knocked down.
Sure.
But because they had enough strength guys that kind of could just like pop up and run around and like potion or pop up and like push the paladin out, and get people moving around, it was a very different kind of combo. They played it that way, the way I wanted the original group to do it. And this is the third time I think I've had the fight go. And only one time where I kind of played him in the like hard mode, mm-hmm. where he was swinging three times around, which he has like a plus 13 to hit. So he's not missing, you know?
Yeah. And he does a bunch of level threes.
Yeah. He's doing like 2d12 plus like, I think, 8 damage, 10 damage. Can't remember. He's just blasting people through people, you know? So, but this time I made it one swing around and there were 8 people at the table, but, 2 of the players weren't really participating. So it really was 6. And, I feel like even with a group of 4, it would have been fine. So I kind of found his sweet spot and it was very interesting to kind of have like a different style mechanic. The players were freaked the fuck out. They're like, this is massive tree. We can't get out. He keeps rooting us to the fucking ground. And I hit him and it's like, okay, you do, 10 damage. Okay. Well, he takes 5. Okay.
Yep.
And roll.
Yeah.
So if he takes fire damage, he makes the save at disadvantage. So like any one single mage with Firebolt can probably take him out pretty quickly. Because, you know, no matter what, if you still roll below a 10, you fail the concentration save.
Right.
You know, and so without any kind of legendary resist, because he's already used them essentially in his endless fight against the darkness. He can't use that to save the concentration.
You don't have to beat him, you just have to make him fail a concentration check, which, you know, it's not necessarily going to be easy. I would imagine he has a fairly sizable bonus to his constitution, but sooner or later he's going to fail it.
Yeah, but the rule is concentration save is, you know, the cap is 10 or half the damage.
Right.
So really, it's you roll below that 10 multiple times, and he's just going to fail it.
Yeah,
I think that's how I handled it this way. Just if he rolls below the 10, he fails. So I didn't even factor in his constitution on it.
Sure.
Because he's exhausted.
And, so. Well, you want to make sure your players can actually succeed.
Yeah. So when I publish the module, I'm going to have like the stat block for him at the end. So people go, oh, what thick massive tree with all these really cool abilities. And then when he gets in a fight, it's just like, oh, he can just swing once. Yeah. That's all he gets.
Yep. He's not that bad.
No, it's pretty good. It's not a hard fight, but it's more of a exposition fight kind of in a way.
It's the setup for the rest of the adventure, it sounds like.
Without going too much into details, with the spoilers, it's imperative that it happened, and it's meant to kind of like, okay, he caused this problem, but there's still that other thing, that other true problem that's going on out there. That's what we really need to start addressing.
Yeah.
So, it's been going good. So shifting gears just a tiny bit, going into Adventures League, I was pleasantly surprised that 4 hours ago, literally 4 hours ago, D&D Beyond posted a What is Adventures League thread.
Oh my god, they posted?
They posted on D&D Beyond. It's the first time I've seen Adventures League like really notated on D&D Beyond.
Oh, I'm not even talking about anything involving Adventures League. I mean, they posted.
No, this is not posted on the Adventures League site.
No, like they posted anywhere. Literally their website, their D&D Beyond, like nothing gets posted on those things other than like once a month, if that.
So, I immediately was like, oh, cool, they're doing something. So I open it up and I start looking through the article. Okay. I don't know who the publisher is. I think it's one of the background guys in D&D Beyond that's been there for a while. And he kind of basically posted like, what is Adventures League? How does it work? How to participate, how to find it, and league resources. So I started scrolling through and looking at it. It's all the base information that you could ever possibly need. And it outlines how to make characters. It's a really good post. You know, I'm going to use it to link to people like, what is Adventures League? How do I join? How to make a character? Well, here it is. Then I get down to the resources, and they have the League Player Guide version 14. Well, the last one that I know of was version 12. Okay.
Okay. So
that was the last one that was updated.
Is okay. is it like one of those hotels where they skip the 13th floor? They skip the 13th version of this?
I don't know. And the funny part is the file for this is actually hosted on the D&D Beyond server, because that's the front end part of the web address.
Okay.
Not the wizard server where the Adventure League stuff is. And I'm double checking right now. Right now, the wizard side doesn't have the 14, it still has the 12.
Huh.
Okay. So maybe it'll update tomorrow. I mean, it did post at least basically for me at 6 at night, you know.
Yeah.
So I know they're West Coast, but maybe it'll get pushed in the update tomorrow. I don't know. So it starts going through, you know, kind of all the articles, all the new stuff. I read through the player's guide. Nothing has changed. They did kind of clarify what books belong with what. But nothing that hasn't already been posted on their Discord server. I haven't checked the Discord server, by the way. I was so happy to see an article on a website.
I know, right?
So they provide a bunch of additional links and where their Twitter handle is and all that stuff. And then they basically post an intro video to Adventures League. All right. And the intro video is the Adventures League video that they made back when Wilds Beyond the Witchlight came out back in 2021.
Okay, so 3 years ago.
That's the video that they use. They couldn't make a new one.
They don't have anybody employed to make a new one. They fired everybody.
No, I think that the crook individual is still there.
I'm joking, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, just with WotC having let go of so many employees.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a weird one to use. Like that, nobody even remembers that one. Very few people even bought that.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people are complaining. It's like, what's just the point of making a published guide since, you know, you add a new book and everything is out of date, and there was no mention of any of the third-party stuff that they have up there.
Yeah.
Very little mention to the DMs Guild. It's just beyond that you can go there and get stuff. So
the top piece of art.
The one
with the sort of flaming skull person riding it's a nightmare.
It looks like it's a nightmare.
It looks like a Magic the Gathering card, let's be real.
It looks like a Magic the Gathering card, doesn't it? With the Asimar Paladin, this just looks like
that's exactly what this looks like. It looks like Azorius fighting, you know, probably Rakdos.
It was just, I looked at him like, this is not D&D. Like, this is not the photo that I would use to get people to come play Adventures League.
Yeah, the second photo is it's a little more in line.
Adventures around a table with playing cards and money and stuff. Yeah.
Why they've stuck four knives into the table, I don't know. And there's an overturned mug, but whatever. Also, there's tentacles, by the way, which is a little weird. And it's playing cards.
I mean, yeah, don't you have a pet octopus that plays cards with you all the time?
I mean, we almost had that this weekend in my Dungeon Crawl Classics game. Yeah, that's the only two pieces of art, though.
Weird. Just the first one is just like, that's a war. This art is more for playing Warhammer than...
Yeah.
Just Sigmar.
Well, if it didn't have the angel flying around, I'd say maybe it's Dragonlance. Because Dragonlance was all about wars.
Yeah.
But they don't really have angelic beings as a part of the setting.
They do now, because you can use any resource book in your Dragonlance adventure. If you want to play an Asimar, this is how we would make it fit.
Yep, and that's why nobody bought their bullshit.
I did have my streaming game this weekend, which is only two fights. It just took a while for the second fight to go through, but it was kind of like a big bad fight.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like a mini boss. Well, really? No, it was the big bad fight. Even though they have to go through the dungeon still, they had the big big bad fight first. Essentially, this is just a little bit behind like how I craft stories and whatnot. There is a Xanathar captain named Amerigo, who's a dwarf who basically runs the Xanathar Guild forces, you know, in lieu of Xanathar. And in Dragon Heist, when you kill him, you disrupt Xanathar's forces for 10 days. And that's basically supposed to be enough time to complete your mission in the Dragon Heist. Okay.
Yep.
So essentially this dwarf is just like this old kind of like dwarven warrior who has an obsession with minotaurs. Okay. And in my setting, as things have gone, Amerigo was still alive. They killed one of the,
that is
the guy, just the dwarf. I was just a second ago. I just talked about him. You don't have to take notes, but at least pay attention.
Go ahead.
So Amerigo, you kill him, disrupt it for 10 days, and in my kind of continuing campaign at Waterdeep, he was still alive. They killed one of the Mind Flayers in the original time I ran through Dragon Heist, but that was it. So he's still alive, and he has this obsession with Minotaurs, where he has these giant cow horns on top of his helmet, and the helmet's shaped like a Minotaur head. And he's all about... He just loves them. He loves Minotaurs.
All right.
So when I ran through...
Minotaur fanboy. Got it.
Minotaur fanboy. Maybe a furry. It's kind of borderline.
Probably.
So being that I had Fiendish Summer, and I completed that, which was my second run through Dragon Heist, with the cultists being everywhere for Asmodeus, there was a cultist base that I had planned for the group to originally run in through to basically find out more information about the Asmodeus cult and root them out of this cultist base in the sewers. That group decided not to investigate that and left it aside. So I figured, well, hell, I paid for this map. I did actually pay for the map. Might as well use the map. So I took Amerigo, put him in this cultist base in the sewers, outside / near Xanathar's lair, and essentially took his obsession with Minotaurs and him finding this cultist base and kind of put two and two together. So
he summons up a Minotaur demon.
So he basically summons up a Minotaur cleric of Baphomet.
Yeah, Baphomet.
And is basically summoning Minotaurs into Xanathar's service. So the final fight with him was him, this Minotaur cleric, who we'll look at in a second. This Minotaur cleric and another Minotaur later, and a bunch of Duergar Stone Guards.
All right.
The caster turned him invisible, greater invisibility, and then hid in a room the entire time. So Amerigo was basically invisible, attacking and just murdering the party. There was one moment where they were trying to focus on killing the Minotaurs that were there, so they left the back line open. So being invisible, he just snuck to the back line, so did one of the Duergars, and they shut the doors. And a Duergar enlarged held the door shut while the invisible Amerigo just started attacking the people that were outside the cultist base. And my wife was not happy.
It's like every week I hear that exact same phrase.
Well, I gave her a kitty earlier.
You didn't kill it, did you?
Well, so anyways.
Oh, no.
So the caster did at one point in time cast Cloud of Death in the back line and got the entire party, and that included the kitty. So I told my wife that the kitty would also be able to use her bless that she had on her, and she could roll the constitution save with the bless. And she did save. She didn't save, but the cat saved. She made the roll for the cat, and the cat saved.
Okay.
So the cat would have taken half damage, but I gave it a special kind of evasion that it just evaded.
Like a rogue evasion, where like it takes nothing evasion. If it succeeds.
It took nothing because it succeeded. And then I explained how all like the fish and frogs and rats in the area behind the base where the Cloud of Death was just like fell off the sewer walls and just keeled over dead, and the fish in the sewer waters died, and there's a turtle there for some reason. And we're like, huh, yeah, that's definitely a good way to exterminate a lot of pests, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's DDT, you know, that's what killing all the insects and everything else. Yeah, I had a friend who played a cleric a paladin for about a year, but he had a pet dog with him the whole time. Dog never leveled up. Yeah, that dog never leveled up. He had the same stats the entire time for a year straight and never died, despite getting into every single combat.
I've seen a lot of videos on Minecraft where people have their dogs with them, and then like they run out to the middle of some mine and the dog falls in the lava.
Yeah.
Why would you bring your dog with you?
Yep.
The only dog that can fight is Interceptor from Final Fantasy VI. It's the only dog, I think, in any media that can just...
You mean Red 13?
No. Red 13's a cat, for one. He's a cat.
Sure, okay.
Okay, Interceptor from Final Fantasy VI. It was Shadow's dog companion that...
I mean, obviously I've never played it. We're not going to have that discussion.
You've played Final Fantasy III.
Yes, I played the shit out of Final Fantasy III.
Interceptor.
Don't remember him.
Remember, like, every once in a while, Shadow would do this weird block, and when he blocked, the dog would go, rah, 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 and run across the screen and, like, bite the enemies and keep running.
I'm looking it up. Maybe I can... I actually don't remember him. Interceptor. I just need to see a picture. Huh. Okay, yeah. Now that I see the sprite version of it. Okay.
Yeah, that's the only dog that I ever could survive a bunch of...
I mean, you gotta realize, I haven't played that game in 25 years nearly, so...
Yeah, and then like when and then Remy or Rem gets dog the same dog skills later when she befriends him. So when she does the block, he'll run out for her too. Because Rem is actually Shadow's daughter.
Yeah. But anyway, I'm sorry.
Lord, I'm waving my hands around and saying Lord, but you can't see it. So the Minotaur.
I talk with my hands too.
The Minotaur cleric. I put the stat block that I used in the podcast chat channel. This kind of piggybacks off our conversation from last week with that necromancer bullshit thing.
Yeah. Okay, I've got it pulled up.
So the Remnant Cultist is far easier to beat than that stupid necromancer wizard that we talked about in depth last week.
That guy was just really, really dumb.
This one, however, it has a cool spell list. It's a necromancer spell list for some reason. For some dumb reason.
Well, it does say, it says Remnant Cultist, not cleric.
Okay, sorry. So I made it a cleric.
Yeah, I'm just saying, but for its spell list, the spell list is fine.
Right, so it's pretty much a necromancer spell list. And the only spell that it has that's not concentration, I think, was... Where was it? Circle of Death. Circle of Death is only non-concentration spell in its spell list, and counterspell and shield, but those don't count.
Yeah, so the basics, yeah.
Right. So, I can only cast one spell with this lady the entire time, because I didn't want to lose the greater invisibility that was on a Homerigo.
I don't know about Phantasmal Killer.
Is it
really? Okay.
So, she's supposed to fall back on a Dagger of Wounding, which is her melee attack. And unlike that one melee attack, that Arcane Blast, that was melee and ranged, that did fucking 4d10 damage or whatever.
Yep.
This is a dagger that you could throw. It's got 20, 60 feet range, plus 6 to hit, does 1d4 plus 3 piercing damage. But that damage that she does permanently takes away the hit points of the player.
Permanently is a strong word. They can get it back through a short or long rest.
Right. But
yeah, there's no magical healing during that combat. You have to be able to rest to get it back.
Yep. And then there's that follow-up damage that it does too, which is another 1d4 necrotic. Like, that's the appropriate amount of damage that they should be doing. Not 40, 10 plus whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, like this isn't, this. I'm looking at this. This isn't bad. This isn't bad at all.
I did happen to find the other high place. I did happen to find that other wizard that I was talking about.
Okay.
If you give me a moment to pull it up.
Sure. But yeah, like 1d4 plus 3, and then it deals a d4 necrotic damage if they don't make a save. That's honestly, it's kind of weak, but the fact they can't heal it and sort of, you know, balances it out.
Yeah, it they don't heal, but it was weird that I kind of hid them the entire time because they didn't have any way of really doing any damage. The cantrips are cantrips, you know. But you're exposed then if you're doing that.
My problem with this thing is, what do you do after they kill this person? Do they just get the dagger of wounding?
I thought about that.
Because you hand that off to a rogue, and then it's a lot more damage.
Yeah, it's a lot of damage. But I wasn't going to give them the dagger of wounding. It just would have fizzled away.
I mean, it's not particularly more useful for a player. And it's definitely more useful for an NPC. Because players, whatever you're fighting, you're going to kill it anyway.
Yeah. So the other caster is the new version of the casters that have the abilities built in. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it actually is featured prominently in the Heart of Ashes module in the keys from the Golden Vault book.
Okay, so again, this remnant cultist, was that one of the old ones, or is that
that's one of the old ones? Yeah,
that's what I thought. Yeah, because it actually had a spell list.
Yep. So this is one of the new ones. To kind of piggyback on that conversation from last week.
Yeah.
That I feel is a little bit better, but the base attack is still very, very potent. So it's your standard mage. It's a named NPC called Charlemagne Daymore, and in the story, she basically has stolen a book and is causing this castle to become ashes, and she's all fiery and shit. So she has three legendary resistances, which you could take out if you just want to use her as a base mage.
I was gonna say, at least this is a named NPC.
Yeah. She has her spellcasting list is Dancing Lights and Mage Hand. She can cast Mage Armor 3 times a day, which I find funny.
I mean, I guess somebody could cast Dispel Magic.
Yeah. So she has Mage Armor 3 times a day because she definitely 100% all the time wants to have Mage Armor running on her.
Yes.
I don't know about you, but when a mage cast Mage Armor on themselves, I never ask again for the rest of the day. Yeah, it's one spell slot. It lasts 24 hours.
When I play spellcasters, I wake up in the morning, I cast Mage Armor.
Yeah.
And unless I somehow hit dispelling, I will never cast it again that day.
Yeah. I think everyone that I know with Mage Armor does not play it for the 24-hour counter that it really has, or the 8-hour counter that it has, and just lets it be 24 hours.
But you're only assumed to be adventuring for 8 hours.
Yeah, and who casts Mage Armor before they go to sleep? Like, seriously. Like, I guess maybe in some campaign where you're really doing the nitty-grittiness, like, Mage is like, oh, shit, guys, I need to take a long rest, but I don't have another spell slot in me to cast Mage Armor. Do we got a Mage Armor scroll anywhere?
Yep. I mean, that's what I will do as well. I almost always have, like, a Mage Armor spell or scroll on me. Not for going to sleep, but just in case I get dispelled.
I am perfectly fine with having just be a weird home rule that Mage Armor is 24 hours. You just use one spell slot in the morning, get your 15 AC. I'm not going to cry about it.
See, I actually liked it in 3rd edition better. I don't remember the time on it. I think it was something like, I think it was an hour per level of the caster. So, you know, you can get a lot of hours out of that. And then if you were the right archetype, I don't remember even they call it prestige class, there was ones, you know, like an abjurationist, then you could extend it, you know, double the amount of time, but you know, you could actually modify times,
that's
stuff
cool.
like that.
So she has her mage armor, 15 AC. She has 123 hit points because for some reason these new monsters that they have since Mordenkainen have a lot more hit points.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, they've learned that you're only going to be fighting with one or two monsters, so just give them a lot of hit points.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Yeah.
It throws off the math a lot. But anyways, so mage armor 3 times a day, once a day, dispel magic, invisibility, and polymorph. Okay. So
that's a shitty spell list.
So her main attack is Ashen Burst, which is a melee or ranged spell attack, plus 9 to hit. She's a CR 10 monster. So plus 9 to hit, up to 60 feet, and on a hit does 5d6 fire damage.
Yeah, and she gets 3 attacks a round.
Right. So not 4d10 on a CR 9 monster. 5d6 with no pluses.
Yeah.
So that's 17 average damage. So you're looking at, if all 3 hit, I can't math, so 45, 49.
Yeah, it's around 50 damage.
51 damage, okay? Which, at that level that you're fighting it, that's not a lot. It's like maybe half a caster's hit points.
Yeah, so, but I love that she could replace one of the attacks with casting a spell. So she could attack you twice and then cast Dispel Magic. Or attack you twice and then cast mage armor. Like her spell list is fucking terrible.
Well, she does have Cinder Spite, which recharges on a 5 or 6.
That's not a spell though.
She creates a magical explosion of fire centered at a point that she can see at 120 feet. Dex saving throw, 10d6 fire damage on a failed save. Any humanoid reduced to 0 hit points by this damage is turned into turned into a tiny charcoal figurine.
Yeah.
Now, essentially, she has fireball on a recharge.
Yeah, which is really dumb, and that's actually a potent ass fireball.
Yeah. What's really cool about her actually is her reactions. Okay. So she can take up to 3 reactions per round, but only 1 per turn. All right. Her first reaction is called Elemental Rebuke. In response to being hit by an attack, she utters the word Ignan, whatever, Italian. And the person takes 3d6 fire damage. She then teleports, along with any equipment that she's carrying or wearing, 30 feet into an unoccupied space that she can see.
She can Misty Step and deal a little damage.
Right. Her fiery counterspell, she interrupts a creature she can see within 60 feet. Countering the spell, if the spell is a 4th level or lower, it fails and has no effect. If the spell is 5th level or higher, she makes an intelligence check. Same old, same old. On a success, if the spell fails and has no effect, whatever the spell's level, the caster takes 3d6 fire damage if the spell fails.
That is incredibly broken.
So the thing is, in this encounter that they put her in, you're basically in this ashen castle. It's being ripped apart by this black hole. And this is floating building pieces everywhere. And so that 30 feet teleport is basically her going from the tower to the armory to the castle to the tower to the armory to the castle. And leaving the players with no real way of being able to chase her down easily.
Mm-hmm.
And like when the players first did this encounter, they used the rope and a grappling hook to grapple over to the armory, and they were kind of shimming away, and she knows that they're there per the module. Okay.
Yeah.
So when they were all halfway across, she fireballed them.
Yeah.
Goodbye rope. And they fell like 50 feet. I killed 2 players right then.
I mean,
you know,
okay. Me as the DM, I absolutely agree with that ruling. Rules as written, it doesn't destroy the rope.
So. Why not?
There's nothing that says that it deals damage to the rope. Each creature in a 20-foot radius sphere centered on that point. So it's a rules wording thing.
Okay, so I fucked that up then.
No, I agree with your ruling, but just, you know how some people are. They'll fucking
I just read that as fireball and left it from there. burned everything. So yeah. That's my bad. Sorry, guys, from a year ago. So I used her. I really like this caster, though, overall.
This is too powerful.
But it's also, I had six players that were level 10 fighting her.
Okay, that's manageable. But I'm just thinking, so challenge rating of 10. So the assumption is you're going to be 7th or 8th level when fighting this person. And you just five people, we'll say. The fiery counterspell is an absolute guaranteed success every time against a character 7th level and under. Because it just auto-stops any 4th level or lower. So every turn, if you're a spellcaster, you're just counterspelled. As well as taking 3d6 damage. The fireball, that's a decent amount of damage. That's a high dex save. And it's the recharge, man. You know, I'm always leery about things like that are recharge. Because, you know, if that dragon successfully gets his breath back every turn, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Like, you just are. Normally, that's not going to happen, but, you know, hey, if you're rolling dice, man, shit happens.
Yeah.
Not to mention, on the, you know, she can counterspell you. Oh, and 3 legendary resist. Like, this is a very, very difficult encounter, especially because of the Misty Step, the Elemental Rebuke.
Yeah, and like I said, she is a solo monster encounter. And I think if I remember correctly, the players did beat her pretty handily because they were able to shove her into one of the rooms.
Yeah, that makes it a little harder. Yeah, there you go. Now she can't really run away.
No, she couldn't run away. No dimension door for her, you know.
Yeah, like I said, her spell list is trash.
Yeah. So this is better than the Necromancer Wizard. It's got more flavor. Like, they took more of the spells that they would have, and they gave them a nice little spin to them, and it works a little bit better. Like, I like the fiery counterspell. It is a little too potent, you know.
The fact that she can just do it she gets 3 reactions a round.
Yeah.
So she can counterspell 3 people a turn.
No, only 1 per turn.
Only 1 per turn. Yeah, so player A goes, counterspell. Player B goes, counterspell. Player C goes, counterspell.
Right. Yeah.
That's 3 people that she can counterspell.
Right, yeah, in the round she can counterspell 3 people, but then she can't elemental rebuke anymore.
Oh, no. I mean, yeah, that's fair. I mean, she's not likely to have to counterspell 3 people. Normally you get maybe 2 casters at most.
It's more the elemental rebuke, you know, that's going to trigger through the 3 times, and then you start casting spells on her. One whole person, she's pretty much fucked.
Yeah, that's what the legendary resist are for.
Now, I don't... Because of how potent she is, I would add in that she takes the 3 reactions per round. I would make that just 2 reactions per round. And 1 of those each per round as well. You know? So she can only do 1 elemental rebuke and 1 fiery counterspell per round.
Yeah, a lot of the issue with this plays off of, does the Cinder Spite recharge or not? If it does, you're in trouble. If it doesn't, then you can probably manage it.
Yeah. But it was an interesting fight, and this is more along the ways of what I'd like to see more monsters become. Shitty spell list not included.
Yeah, give them a real spell list, please. Not rechargeable fireball. Just give them fireball. Give them a few fireballs.
Yeah, I think that's what they're trying to just get around, you know, is, you know, people knowing everything. But like, you look at that cultist from before, like, I can look at that list and I know what counterspell is, I know what fear is, I know what vampiric touch is, I know suggestion, I know hideous laughter, greater invisibility. I'd have to look up phantasmal killer, dream, and mislead. Okay.
Yeah.
I know circle of death, you know, that's just bigger fireball. So, I mean, I still need to look up those things, but like I said, I'm playing D&D Beyond. I just hover over the spell and it pops up right there, you know, in a nice little pop-up box. So I can use the old system, still be fine. So, but I just wanted to give more examples of the caster, since we're kind of like doubling down on them from last week.
Yeah, it's an interesting topic. You know, I'm I'm not even really curious to see where they go with it. Generally, I haven't liked that direction. I complained about it a lot when they decided to move that way.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons, because now we're getting stuff like that. You know, it's interesting sort of creation, but I wouldn't say it's balanced or even good.
I definitely says it opens up the creative space for writers to create very unique wizards, but at the same time, you can't just trash the old spell system at the same time.
Yeah.
So yeah. You have to find that better middle ground.
Yeah, like if they did nothing with this guy except get rid of the Cinder Spite, give them fireballs, and you know, actual spell list, it would probably be a little better. Obviously they still need to work on a little bit of it, but
yeah. Yeah, I like the flare with the counterspell, I like the flare with the elemental rebuke. So I'm like, it's better. Just don't give me 40-10 on a fucking dagger stab.
Yeah, it definitely don't do that. So I got to finally run a Dungeon Crawl Classics game, and it's been a while since I've been able to run one of those. So
okay.
I ran the Hypercube of Might, spelled M-Y-T. The Hypercube of Might is a cube that's been sitting in this field behind this shitty little town for 1,000 years that was created by a wizard known as Midas the Mad. And for anyone who's not familiar with Dungeon Crawl Classics, it's much more akin to early D&D. Everybody plays zero-level characters. Like, you are literally barrel makers and farmers. You have no adventuring skills at zero level. So they all get drunk, and they all decide to go into the Hypercube of Might. Normally, when you run a zero-level cube, players will play 3 or 4 characters at the same time because you're going to go through them very quickly. In this one, it was designed a little differently. Everybody was playing just a single character at a time, but pretty much as soon as that character died, another character would, you know, replace it like the next round later.
Okay. So
I have 6 players. They're all zero level fucking gong farmers. You know, they have nothing. They are nothing. And they decide to go adventuring to see if they can get rich and step into the Hypercube of Might. First place they end up is in a hallway that you can sort of see space and time on each side. And they start walking down this hallway, and it's a little bit foggy in there. And our buddy, Jacob Muffin, he's out front, and he sees some bodies up in front of him, like some people standing ahead, and he starts to walk forward. Well, I make an attack roll, and he's disintegrated immediately. You know, because that's what happens in Dungeon Crawl Classics. They had run into a group of basically space marines with plasma rifles who were, they were out of space and time. You know, they had gotten trapped in this place just like everybody else. So they apologize profusely for killing this guy, and they, you know, everybody goes on their way. The troopers travel one way, the rest of the party goes the other way. And they get to a set of doors, one on the east wall, one on the west wall. And they find out that to get into these doors, they have to sacrifice blood. So as the maximum amount of hit points any character has is 4, and it takes 3 points of blood just to open one of these doors, nobody's really willing to do that. So they had a pony with them, because when you start as a starting character, you start with just one random item and a weapon of some sort. And the random item for one of the characters happened to be a pony. So our friend Muffin is trying to get the pony's leg up into the mouth so he can feed the pony's blood to it, basically. Well, one of the other characters decides, no, we're just going to club the pony to death, and starts whacking it upside the head with a club. After 2 swings, it manages to break free of our buddy Muffin and run down the hall. Well, he starts chasing after it. And it was heading in the same direction that the space troopers had just gone. So as he's running along, he yells, "Don't shoot the pony!" So I rolled, and they didn't shoot the pony. And then he comes into view, and I rolled, and they shot him again. We're not 10 minutes in. We're in the first room, and he's already died twice. So anyway, moving on. The next, they finally figure it out. They get into the next room, and the next room is a room full of illusions. There's a mask floating sort of in the middle of the room, and then they see three other doors that they're going to try to get to. And you know, walking around in here can be dangerous. If every time you start moving forward, you have to roll on this chart, and hopefully you don't roll terribly. One person actually did plummet to their death in the course of it. But
yeah, it's not a dungeon unless you plummet to your death.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he stepped through an illusionary, you know, platform and splat. So one of the other things that's in this room is sort of like hanging disco balls.
Mm-hmm.
And as they're walking by, one of the players looks into the disco ball, like actively looks at it. Well, if you've played enough tabletop games, anything with mirrors or reflective can be kind of risky. So a flash of light happens and three other versions of himself appear. So now we have four. By the way, the character's name was Steve. So we now have four Steves standing next to each other doing the whole Spider-Man meme, sort of pointing, you know, the whole pointing at each other thing. And then they start proceeding to kill each other. The four Steves are attacking amongst themselves. What would you do if you were one of the players that are not one of those Steves?
Popcorn.
Popcorn. Yeah, exactly. You sit back and watch to see what happens. That's not what they did. They all just killed all the Steves.
Okay.
Including the real Steve.
I mean, that's also a valid answer, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, well, to be fair, the real Steve, I think, actually died to one of the other Steves, but they didn't know. They just killed all the Steves until there were no Steves moving, which was fucking fantastic. They had another encounter like that in that same room where they glanced at another disco ball. But moving on to the next room, I'm not going to go to every single room, but the next two were kind of interesting. The next room they got to was in four corners of the room. There was a beam of light with a brain hovering over, and there was a dude in the room who basically thought they were there to... They were all there to participate in his experiments. So a couple of the players decided they were willing to go along with the experiments and actually got into the beams, and it started transmogrifying them. So Muffin's the first person to go in, and it immediately changes him into an octopus.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so remember I mentioned tentacles earlier?
Yeah, yeah.
Yep, so he gets turned into an octopus. He goes through a whole bunch more transmogrifications, and when it was all said and done, he actually ended up leaving the room as a griffin, and one of the other players ended up leaving the room as a manticore.
And that's definitely a power up.
Yeah, yeah, for both of them, because you, they still had, you know, four hit points or less. They still had shitty stats, but they had pretty decent attack methods. Like the griffin actually got two attacks a round, which nobody else had, and he could fly.
That's cool.
So they get to the last room, and in the last room, there are six pedestals, each one with a magic item on it. One of them was a black bastard sword. One of them had a ring. One of them was a cloak, a pair of boots, a staff, and a sixth item that I'm forgetting what it was. I don't remember who it was. I think it was my friend Mike. He's the one who grabbed the bastard sword right out of the gate and then failed the persuasion check that everybody had to make when they grabbed an item. So the bastard sword was now in control of him because they're all sentient magic items.
Of course.
That every single one of them wanted to have all of the items in possession. So now we have this sort of free for all of everybody grabbing magic items and then trying to take everybody else's magic items. And when you got, you know, three or four hit points, you die real quick. We had the person who was the manticore, he stayed out of it. He actually just sat off to the side. Muffin actually successfully made his check, so he was in control. And he knew kind of what was going on at that point, so he's trying to stop everybody else from getting the items. But he can't tell them anything because he's a fucking griffin.
Caw, caw.
Yeah, exactly.
Caw, motherfucker, caw.
So they start battling it out. You know, everybody ends up dying. Every magic item they got was busted as hell, too. The player who ended up winning it just sort of got lucky. The first item he grabbed gave him +4 to armor class. The second item he grabbed gave him +8.
Okay.
So you're zero level characters, man. And think D&D terms. Like, he's got a 22 armor class at this point. Anybody who's going to fight him has to nat 20 to hit him. So he ends up killing everybody, getting all of the items together. And when he does, he turns inside out and Midas the Mad is reformed, looks at everybody, teleports out. So that's how that ended.
So this module reminds me a lot of an Adventure Time episode.
Okay, I could see that.
Have you watched Adventure Time?
I have never seen Adventure Time, but I am at least familiar with it and the concept of it.
Okay. You should watch at least one episode called Dungeon Train. All right. So Dungeon Train is Finn and Jake are just walking through a forest, and they come across this train that's just like in this infinite loop in the middle of the forest. Okay. And there's like infinity signs and Ouroboros signs all on it. Yeah. And they're just like, okay, whatever, let's ride the train because this is Adventure Time. So they hop on a train, and immediately there's like these crystalline ants that attack Finn, and he kills them. They drop a bunch of loot. So he loots them, and they go into the next car, and there's more bad guys, and they keep going car to car to car, and there's just more and more just weird chaotic rooms, like wizard monkeys shooting lightning bolts, death traps and whatnot. And the whole thing is basically this infinite, you know, dungeon train that just has more and more loot the longer you go.
Yeah, okay.
And eventually Jake the Magic Dog figures out that it's a trap and they get stuck in there forever and time works differently. And like
sounds very familiar. Yeah, because time does work differently in the Hypercube of Might, too. You don't age. You don't need to eat.
Well, at one point in time, Jake leaves the train and talks like one of the magic monkeys and then goes back into the train and fights this massive, like, fire elemental with this, like, massive mace and cool fucking helm and whatnot. And it turns out it was Finn the entire time because he looted so much gear. He became this unstoppable behemoth of death and destruction.
Right.
And it was just
like, sounds like the plot to the Flash movie.
But just the Hypercube reminded me of that for some reason.
Yeah, no, that's an accurate description. It sounds like.
And essentially, there are bosses in the train, and the bosses are other adventurers who have been going through the train endlessly.
So when we were going to play this thing, we printed out 20 character sheets. Everything in DCC, at least at zero level, it's just completely random. You have no control over what you start as. You have no control over items. You don't have any control over your stats. You just roll stats. And they go in order as to where you rolled them. So you can just print characters out. So we printed we printed 20 characters, and then Muffin decided he wanted to actually create his. So he made 4 characters. We went through 25 characters.
Jesus.
Like, I actually had to start handing out old character sheets again.
Here, use this one again. Steve 2.
Well, we took the names off. And
Steve
just,
6, I guess.
Yeah. Yep.
Also, for some reason, whenever anyone talks about octopuses, I always think of a One Piece character called Hayachi, who is this octopus humanoid creature who basically has 8 swords. And he's in the very early parts of One Piece and the later parts of One Piece, because, you know, that series has been going on for fucking 3 decades 35 now.
35 years, yeah.
Yeah. But he's a main character. He's a beloved character in the franchise. But last we saw of him was a cover story. Okay, the cover story is basically his adventure going through the seafloor and, you know, finding a bunch of new friends and whatnot. Because the cover stories are cute little side stories that happen at the beginning of each issue, just one page. but they would go on for like a year, and they're canon stories to the story. Well, anyways, he meets up with a mermaid and a starfish that the One Piece crew met up with, and he become friends, and they fulfill his lifelong dream of opening a takoyaki stand.
Really?
Okay. Yes.
The octopus opens up a takoyaki stand.
Yes. And my mind always just goes back there. I have the image of the cover art in there. That's when anyone mentions octopus, this pops up in my head every single time. I don't know why.
Wow.
I'm probably weird. I'm probably need some more pills.
I mean, it doesn't always have to be octopus, I don't think, but I've never heard
it. It does. I think it does.
Yeah, okay. I actually Googled it. Yeah, so it must contain octopus. Mind you, it basically, for people who are not aware, takoyaki, Japanese food, it's basically like almost like breaded meatballs, but it's made out of octopus.
No, it's a hush puppy with octopus.
Yeah, that's a perfect description. Thank you.
Yeah. So,
yeah. So, does he eat his own cooking?
Well, look at the picture. You tell me. That man definitely eats his own cooking.
Where's the picture at?
Podcast chat.
Oh, there it is. I mean, okay, he's not a true octopus, at least. But it's still fucking weird. He's got octopus, suckers, but he's not a real octopus. Either way, it's still
starfish
weird.
With a Jamaican bob hat, whatever that is.
Yeah,
I don't know why.
Yeah, having never read One Piece or watched it, I'm okay with that now, knowing that he cooks his own kind and eats them.
You should, because it's been going on for 3 decades now, and it's about to be done.
No, I'm good.
They have a card game.
I'm good. I mean, I got through 100 episodes of Bleach, and that was done. That was enough.
Yeah, that was the worst anime ever.
Oh, no, Bleach wasn't that bad, but it's...
Yes, it was.
Yeah, after 100 episodes of just about any show, I'm going to be done. My brother has been watching, he's been watching Murder, She Wrote. Are you familiar with the show, at least?
Yes. Yes, okay. I am.
For whatever reason, he loves those old 80s TV shows, but he's been watching it, and I think he's up to season 11 now. There are 12. At about like 20-some-odd episodes per season.
When did Angela Lansbury die? 2022. Yeah. It wasn't that long ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Next week, I'm probably going to talk about Brindlewood Bay, since we are bringing up Angela Lansbury and Murder, She Wrote. I just got my copy of the book in today.
Not bad.
Yeah, and the whole thing, it literally is just murder mysteries that you get to run players through. It's a player-driven, narrative-based game. I've been doing a bit of research on how to run those kind of games.
So Murder, She Wrote, there's a comma after murder, I didn't know that. So it's Murder, She Wrote. The last series was in 1996. 4 television films were released in 1997 to 2003. 2 point-and-click video games were released in 2009 and 2012.
Wow.
And a spin-off book series that's in publication to this day.
Hmm.
How? Who's reading that?
Oh, people read murder mysteries. People love them. I mean, fuck, man, Sherlock Holmes is over 100 years old, and people read the shit out of those books.
You're not making more Sherlock Holmes.
That's fair. But, I don't know, Murder, She Wrote, it's going to be people my age or older, people who grew up at least familiar with the show, I would imagine. Interesting.
And there were... They commissioned 4 movies. Yeah, 1997, 2000, 2001, 2003.
Yep.
Huh.
I guess my brother will have to watch those two. I'll have to let him know they exist.
Oh, and it's Dame Angela Lansbury.
Oh, right. My apologies. That is true. So last thing I had that I wanted to talk about this week is apparently Modiphius is going to release a Discworld RPG.
Okay.
So I know you're probably not very familiar with Discworld, but do you know you ever heard of Terry Pratchett?
Yes.
Okay. So Discworld, it's been around. I don't even remember when these were written. Probably the 70s or 80s. Probably 80s, I think.
83.
Okay, there you go. So, but Discworld, it's beloved by a lot of people. I have never read the books, but I have watched pretty much all of the made-for-TV movies that they've done. And okay. It's a very just sort of campy, hilarious setting, and I'm very glad they've decided to make this into an RPG. Apparently they had made one, but it was 25, 26 years ago. Yeah, last one was 1998. So they haven't had any RPG stuff since then.
Hmm. Okay.
I like Modiphius. They're the same company that makes made Dune, of which I will be running.
Fallout.
Yeah, they did Fallout. But they made Dune, which I'm going to be running here probably in about a month. Since the movie came out recently, I've sort of been on a Dune kick. I've been rereading the novel.
And
Dune! But I've been reading the novel again. I've picked up the RPG again. I actually ordered a starter adventure. I don't remember what it's called. But there's a starter adventure that literally walks you through how to run the game. Because it is much more of a narrative-based game as well, which is, it really is kind of outside my wheelhouse. I've never tried to run stuff like that.
Okay. Everything's 25% off right now on their main website.
Oh, on Modiphius?
Mm-hmm. Hmm. You can get the core rulebook in the standard edition that you have, or the Atreides Collector's Edition, or the Harkonnen.
The Harkonnen. Yeah, so
Collector's Edition.
I actually went through this. I was wanting to order from them directly the other day, but the Starter Adventure, that's the only thing they were really sold out of.
It's currently in stock right now. Adventures in the Imperium, Agents of Dune, Deluxe Starter Set.
Is it? God damn it. Well, it's too late now. I've already ordered.
Power and Pawns, The Emperor's Court.
Yeah, the Adventures in Imperium, Agents of Dune, that's what I ordered. But it was sold out at the time. Or so maybe, hang on, that's the British website I'm looking at. Need to be on the US one. There we go.
Well, same language.
No, okay, so the US one is sold out. It is the same language, but the shipping times and probably shipping costs would be more to order from the British one.
Ooh, the Dune Core Imperium Limited Edition rulebook for only $711. Comes bound in leather.
Better be coming bound in sandworm hide if it's going to cost me $700.
I think that's the intent, is that it's sandworm hide.
No, it better be real sandworm hide.
Certificate of Edition, there's only 150 of them made. Huh.
I mean, that's pretty cool.
Description. Yep. Made 100% sandworm. Comes with your own vial of spice.
Do they send you a bottle of cinnamon?
No. That would be great, though.
Because if you actually read the novels, that's what the spice is supposed to smell like. It smells like cinnamon.
So spice is cinnamon. Got it.
Yes. You've said that before anyway. You already knew that.
I didn't know that, actually.
Okay. Well... But yeah,
I did see the popcorn bucket, though.
Oh, yeah. Legendary popcorn bucket.
Everyone ordering the Dune popcorn bucket, no popcorn, extra butter.
For those who aren't familiar with this one, they put out a popcorn bucket that looks like a fleshlight.
Why?
Yeah.
Why would they do that?
I don't think they actually released that one. The final version that they did release to the public did not look like that, fortunately. Oh, well. All right. That's all I got for this week. You got anything else?
Yeah, we're ending on Fleshlight. Yeah, that's good.
Well, since we started on the the storytelling of hilarious things, we'll end on the way we would have normally opened the podcast, by talking about a Fleshlight.
Stop saying.
Bye, Craig. Fleshlight.